I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest is Dr. Larry Payne, who is an internationally respected yoga teacher and back specialist. He is the co-author of the international best-selling Yoga for Dummies, Yoga Treatment, and The Business of Teaching Yoga. He was selected as a yoga expert by the World Economic Forum, WebMD, Reader's Digest, Rodale Press, Yoga Journal, and named one of America's most respected yoga teachers by the Los Angeles Times. Dr. Payne is co-founder of the yoga curriculum at the UCLA School of Medicine and founding director of the Yoga Therapy Treatment and Prime of Life Yoga Certification Programs at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. He is featured in 7 DVDs on yoga therapy for common ailments at www.samatha.com. Most recently, he is co-author of Yoga Therapy and Integrative Medicine, published by Basic Health and scheduled for release December 2014. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Payne, and I look forward to hearing about yoga.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Now, why is yoga so popular now?
Well, I think what's happened is that people are starting to see the benefits of yoga.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
what happened is back in the 60s, yoga was kind of like a cult fad or something like that, and then we had some people come on the radio or on the television, and one was Lilias Fullan, another one was Richard Hittleman, mm-hmm. and they brought it into our living rooms. And then Jane Fonda made some videos, the fitness lady, and then it started getting more mainstream. And now you see it on commercials, and you see the athletes doing it. And just this week in the Los Angeles Times, I had something called Broga
mm-hmm.
that talked about how so many of the athletes now, the male athletes, are doing yoga. And so I've never seen it so popular, I think mainly because now it's accessible. It's not thought of something that's just weird, and it's recognized as something with a lot of benefits.
Mm-hmm. And what are the greatest benefits of a yoga practice?
Carl, I think that if you looked at the number one benefit of yoga practice, it would be stress reduction. And mm-hmm. the American Medical Association says that stress is in 80% of all illness.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got something that's do it yourself or go to a class, and this number one benefit is stress reduction, that's a great thing for health.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other benefits I think that you'll find is that it improves your circulation, which almost all health professionals like to see happening. And, I mean, there's a long list, but I tip my top five.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then everybody thinks that yoga is there to make you flexible, but yoga is really there to balance your muscles. So not just flexibility, but strength and flexibility. And then another one that really helps is your willpower. So
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't think that doing a yoga practice would have anything to do with opening the refrigerator door, but it does. And then finally, it's an overall sense of well-being. So I'll never forget the first yoga class I ever took.
Mm-hmm.
And I went because I had this back problem for over a year that nobody in town could fix it. I went to a lot of great doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, it was a woman who was very compassionate. She was in her 80s, and she was a disciple of someone I would meet later in life called Indra Devi. And so she said, just do what you can. At the end of the class, you'll be surprised. And I did, and I'll tell you something, this thing I had like a dog bite in my butt
mm-hmm.
for over a year was gone. It lasted for 4 hours. I also felt very high. I felt like at peace with the world. It's like a sensation I wasn't used to.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hooked from that day on.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 34 years ago.
Wow. That's great.
Yeah.
Now, you've written the Yoga for Dummies, and it's in the mm-hmm. third edition.
And it is, and my co-author, who sadly passed away this year, as Georg Feuerstein, and I was very lucky to have a long, you know, career of writing with him over spanning probably 15 years. We had first edition, second edition, third edition. And Georg Feuerstein was known as the authority on yoga in America, like philosophy. And mine is more about therapeutics and the postures. And, you know, I know something about the philosophy, but my main thing I'm known for is being one of the pioneers in yoga as therapy. And so we also, in this third edition, we have some new things like that. We have yoga therapy. We also have some new, more contemporary things like yoga with the wall, yoga with a partner, and also one of the latest things is what they call restorative yoga.
Great.
Those are some of the highlights that are new that weren't in the other edition.
I told you I'm 82, and so how would I choose a yoga class that's right for me?
Well, here's what's interesting about yoga, and we talked a little bit about this when we met on the phone earlier. Yoga has something for everybody. I mean, if you can breathe and concentrate, you can do yoga. But unfortunately, the classes across the country predominantly offered, like I would say 80, 90% are for what I call the young and restless. And that's something from like teenagers up until about 40 years old. So if you follow the life of a professional athlete, you'll notice that most of them are out of the game by the late 30s, certainly by 40, because the body doesn't move like it used to. So they have to modify what they're doing. So the person that Wikipedia says, and many other sources as well, had the most to do with making yoga, modern yoga, popular was a man named Krishnamacharya, kind of like Hare Krishna, Krishnamacharya. And I met him many times. I did a tribute to him that I made a video about. And but his son, Desikachar, was my teacher. And they both taught that yoga was for three stages of life. The beginning stage, you know, the building stage. And they have Sanskrit names, not to get too crazy and formal, but Shikshana means the building stage. So, like you say, you take somebody from teenager up to the life of a professional athlete, somewhere around there. And then the next stage is called Rakshana, which means you maintain what you have. And you enjoy life, and you stay healthy for as long as you can. That stage is somewhere in America between 40-something, and it keeps getting longer and longer into the 70s. And then the other stage is called chikitsa, or like a therapy. So people have, you know, back problem, knee problem, hip problem, heart problem, all the systems of the body, and they're treated, and this, those are usually like one-on-one, Carl. So then we've adapted the word yoga therapy here. And then in Los Angeles at Loyola Marymount University, I have had a yoga therapy school for the last 10 years. And we have over 100 students every semester, 30 instructors. And for the first time ever, we had the first yoga therapy interns at the Venice Family Clinic through the Sims Man chapter. And here's the first yogis at a integrated medicine clinic with their white robes on and, you know, taking clients and mixed with the chiropractors, the acupuncturists, the medical doctors. It was just quite a special thing.
How does yoga differ from Tai Chi? Because I hear people talk about Tai Chi.
Tai Chi is another wonderful thing. You know, I think what you'll find is the systems that come from the East, Tai Chi, Qigong is another one. I think Qigong is a little easier to get started with. Tai Chi is a little more athletic. They have like medical Qigong and so forth. I think they're very similar. They work with moving energy. So yoga calls this energy that moves through your body, similar to like what they do in Tai Chi and Qigong, they call it Qi. We call it prana. And so in with yoga, it's prana. With Tai Chi, it's called Qi, and in Japan, when they use this energy, it's called Ki. So what we all use in the Eastern philosophies is moving energy through the body, which is, I think you'd look at it as a subtle nervous system. When you walk into the office of an acupuncturist, you see all of these charts with these meridians, they're called, you know, going through the body. And in yoga, these are called nadis. And so when you, as yoga therapy is coming to life, and also in the system of Ayurveda, which is the sister to yoga, you'll see these subtle energy flows, you know, what we call chakras and nadis. And these are all based on subtle energy systems, just like they do with Tai Chi, Qigong, those things. So we're similar. I highly recommend those too.
Is there a meditation piece to these practices?
A meditation piece. Well, part of yoga, when you step back and look at it, the eight limbs of yoga is how it was really taught, how it's defined. You know, it starts with really moral codes, what you call the do's and don'ts, you know, how you treat other people, how you take care of yourself, and then the practice of what we call asana, physical postures, and then advanced breathing, called pranayama, and then higher and higher states of meditation, starting with sense withdrawal and leading up to the highest level, it's called samadhi. So, you know, meditation is part of what is called the eight limbs of yoga and a vital part. And I think that what's interesting in America is what's become the most popular form of meditation is not yoga meditation, it's Buddhist. So the Vipassana. And so, you know, these things of, there's a man named Jon Kabat-Zinn who has done a lot of work in hospitals and so forth, and they have a program on the road, and also called mindfulness. But, you know, any form of the Eastern yoga is terrific, whether it's a yoga meditation. And yoga meditation uses a lot of things called mantra or japa with beads. And then there are two formal organizations that started back, one started in the 20s, the Self-Realization Fellowship with Paramahansa Yogananda, the Autobiography of a Yogi, and the other one more like the 50s with the Maharishi and the TM movement. So those are both formal yoga organizations that, you know, emphasize mainly meditation. And interestingly, they both encourage you to sit in a chair. And, you know, that sitting on the floor would be more advanced. But in the, you know, in the yoga classes and so forth where they teach us, often sitting on the floor, people have week-long meditations. And then one other form that's become quite popular is, for a personal friend of mine, Dr. Richard Miller has something that is part of the yoga tradition called Yoga Nidra, and his is called Eye Rest. And so he's been doing giant research projects in places like Walter Reed, helping the vets with post-traumatic syndrome and so forth. You know, and it's a form of relaxation, meditation mixed together.
I took yoga classes, I told you, years and years ago.
You were a pioneer.
And also I started meditating years and years ago. That was probably...
Who was your meditation teacher? What flavor was it?
It's Casey, Edgar Casey.
Oh, Edgar Casey. That's a special kind of meditation.
Right. Well, it's not too different. Instead of having a mantra... We had, well, I was in a Search for God group for many years, and each chapter had a affirmation, really, that you use. Like, for the first one was, "Not my will, but thine, O Lord, be done in me and through me. Let me ever be a channel to others."
You know, the affirmation that came from many of these great pioneers like Casey really fall back, you know, over 1,000 years ago in yoga under something called bhavana.
Oh, really?
So that word bhavana is the word for visualization, the word for affirmation. It's the word for goal planning. You know, and before there was Oprah's Secret, the secret, there was bhavana. And that's a word that's a few thousand years old that has to do with all those categories of using your mind in a positive way. And, you know, you are what you think, all those things have been said by great people, comes under bhavana.
These were all helpful when I had lung cancer, because I had been meditating, I had been, you know, taking the yoga classes, I had been using visualization at times, I had been using affirmations. So these things, you know, they just kind of all...
Well, you're a great example of what can be done with these, because I heard your story, and, you know, you were told you didn't have much long to live, and you turned things around, and that was how long ago?
It was 40 years in July.
You're my new hero, I told you.
Well, I think very my good. Doctor was very progressive, too. He did not use a holistic approach, but his even things that he had me do that I couldn't understand at the time, I've seen research in the last 6 months that validated what he told me 40 years ago. One thing being, he told me to take high-dose vitamin A. And by high dose, I mean I started at 300,000 international units. Then I went to 100,000, and then I went to 50,000 for a year. And as you know, the recommended daily is 5,000.
Yeah, that would
and
be
so,
high.
You know, I told him, I said, well, I'm concerned because this is a fat-soluble vitamin. It isn't excreted like the water-soluble. And he said, oh, well, I'm going to give you vitamin E to take care of the toxicity. So he gave me a toxic dose of vitamin E. And so about 4 months ago, I read the research every Sunday, and 4 months ago, I see they did research on, they took pancreatic cancer cells, they took pre-pancreatic cancer cells, and they took normal cells. They put vitamin A on them, and guess what? It had no effect on the pancreatic cancer cells. It had no effect on the normal, but it reverted the precancer cells back to normal. And that's exactly why he told me I was taking a high-dose vitamin A.
Yeah, there's some people who are really treasures that have, you know, things from a long time ago that we just are just discovering now, and that's fantastic. And I think that coming back to yoga, every day we find something new that, you know, that comes from yoga that can help people. And when we were talking, I especially wanted to point out that the majority of the classes now, when you go to a group yoga class, they're for people that are really what I call young and restless. They are under 40. So there was a whole series of articles about people getting injured in yoga in the New York Times, so forth, yoga can wreck you and all these things, because the people were going to the wrong class. So I mentioned to you that yoga was meant for three stages of life, you know, the growing stage, the maintaining stage, and then also when people are injured. So I've really gone out of my way to pioneer a type of yoga for groups called Prime of Life Yoga, which is for people that are somewhere between 40 and 70. And this is the majority of our population right now. So, you know, the people that are taking yoga, they'll, you know, they'll go there, and especially every weekend there's some guy who goes to retreat with his wife, and there's a pretty young thing teaching the yoga class, and he just is on the floor with his legs out in front and reaches for his toes and tries too hard and hurts himself. This happens every weekend somewhere. So, you know, the yoga should be adapted for the group. And if you look at that group between 40 and 70, there's 120 million people there just in the U.S. And it's not just the boomers, Carl, because the boomers are now like 65. So these are people from 40-something to 70-something, and there's always people who, you know, are exceptions, and but this is the mainstream. So I think that those of you listening out there who are in the category from 40 up, that there is hope for you, and that what I'm calling Prime of Life Yoga is now going to be available in on different coasts, like teaching there in the fall at the Princeton Yoga Center, and also in the Southwest Texas at a place called Yoga Yoga. And if they can't find these things, I have 8 DVDs. May I mention my website?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
It's SAMATA.com, like what Samata you? Samata.com. And for those listening that would like to get started with something that's safe and then work your way up and you're, you know, over 40, it makes a lot of sense to go this way, the prime of life yoga. And at the website, you'll see a lot of things also that are like yoga therapy. I mentioned that I have a yoga therapy school at Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles, where we have over 100 students every year. Mm-hmm. And 4 different levels training to be a yoga therapist. And this particular school helps people work with modern medicine. So that's kind of our bent, yoga therapy and modern
mm-hmm.
medicine.
Mm-hmm. Great. What are some of the new frontiers for yoga?
Well, I think that I've mentioned the ones that I feel are the fastest rising. One of mm-hmm. them is this age bracket of over 40, like it's okay, mm-hmm. you know, we mm-hmm. still got some wind in our sails, you know. And the other one is yoga therapy, the two I just mentioned, because,
okay.
oh my gosh, you know, there's so many things that yoga can help. Like, I can't tell you, I mean, literally in Los Angeles, where I've had my practice for 34 years, I have helped over 1,000 people
mm-hmm.
not have back surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say of all the things that yoga therapy helps most consistently is preventing people from back surgery, because something like a 10 or 15 minute practice a day
mm-hmm.
gets rid of so many problems. And if you think about it, in our society, the way it works is we just bend forward too much. So most of these back problems come from people just rounding over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
we wake up in the morning and we sit on the edge of our bed and we bend forward. We go in the bathroom and we sit on the toilet and bend forward, and mm-hmm. we get ready to go out.
Mm-hmm.
You bend forward, look over the mirror, and then if you live in California, especially you get in your car and drive and bend forward. If you go to any corporate job, there's a computer sitting on your desk, and you bend forward, and then when you come home, you answer your personal emails, so your eyes get blurry, and you bend forward. So the majority of these back problems are coming from people who bend forward too much, so you have lumbar strain, disc problems, sciatica, you know, all those kinds of sacroiliac problems from a lot of them, majority of them from bending forward too much.
Mm-hmm.
And so yoga can help people with all of those as well as the other things.
Mm-hmm.
People who are born with some problems, there's a particular condition called spondylolisthesis, which means that your vertebrae slip forward in most cases,
mm-hmm.
majority of the time. So the worst thing for them to do is to bend backwards. So, you know, you have to be able to know enough from a good school what to give people, what not to give them. And then, but almost any yoga practice that's a safe practice, that's somewhere like 10 or 15 minutes a day, is going to make people feel better.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. And you can do it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good. I think that between you and Dr. David Hanscom, you're probably uh-huh. going to put the spinal surgeons out of business. He's a spinal surgeon, and I interviewed him a couple months ago, and he says that 90% of all spinal surgery is a waste of your time and money. And he
right.
has developed a mental process that one goes through, which probably would relate closely to the yoga thing. It's a
It really does help the mental part of you.
Yeah.
You know, there are in defense of some surgeon, there are some people who need a surgery.
Right.
You know,
right.
You,
he agreed.
Something
10%.
Breaks off, or you know, but a lot of back problems, honestly, could be really improved by a yoga
mm-hmm.
therapy,
mm-hmm.
a specific routine for your back condition, and then you know, if you get lucky, to have somebody one-on-one. There is an organization called the International Association of Yoga Therapists, IAYT.org,
mm-hmm.
and they have people in all 50 states, also in 50 countries.
Mm-hmm.
And the president is an MD and a yoga teacher, Dilip Sikkar, And the person who inspires the research, Satbir Khalsa, is a Harvard professor. And the director is like a tireless administrator who's the one who got us in 50 countries, John Kepner.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that people who are interested in this new part of yoga, which is spoken about in Yoga for Dummies, can look at their website and find yourself a yoga therapist that has a good background.
Great. Now, can you then walk us through a yoga technique that people could use that would make them feel good?
I can. What, 2 or 3 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. So everybody listening out there, to Carl and I, if you don't mind, just find a place where you can choose to either lie on your back, and if you have a back problem, sometimes it helps to bend your knees, or you could put some pillows under your knees, or if you're more comfortable sitting in a chair. And one of the things about sitting in a chair, especially for ladies, is that a lot of chairs were built for men. So if you're a woman and you're shorter than 5'5", you may want to put something underneath your feet, so that you stabilize and don't dangle your feet. And then just bring your back up nice and tall if you're sitting, or if you're lying on your back. Bring your arms across your chest and hug yourself. And then let your elbows come down to the ground and let your hands flop open. And now if you'll put your right hand on your upper chest and your left hand on your lower belly, and with the goal of two things, that you're going to breathe only through the nose on the inhalation and the exhalation. So yoga is one of the few disciplines that says that you just breathe through the nose. Almost everything else is nose and mouth. And if you try to breathe through the nose when you're swimming, you'll drown. So you just use this for yoga. And so what your goal is, that you're breathing through the nose and the hand on your chest doesn't move, or to the best of your ability. It takes time to practice this. So you're just moving the hand on your belly, and the belly in yoga is just below the navel. So breathing through the nose, as you inhale, expand the belly in all directions. And then as you exhale, release the belly, let the air come out. And continue to inhale and expand, and to exhale and release. And as you do, begin to make your exhalation a little longer than your inhalation. So the inhale or inhalation is free, and the exhalation is longer. And as you continue, begin to forget about the grocery list. Things that are on your mind, let them go, and begin to think about your breathing as a meditation. So when you inhale, you expand. And when you exhale, you release. And when your mind goes somewhere else, and it will, bring it back. Belly rises. And belly falls. And spend a little time with this as you're breathing through the nose, inhaling and exhaling. And think about just releasing anything on your mind, any problems whatsoever, just let it go. So you inhale and expand. You exhale and release. And when you're working on your own, try to work up from something like 10, 12 times to something close to 30, 40 times. And then when it's time to come back, just slowly let your breath come back to normal. And spend a few moments with how you feel after that exercise. And compare it to how you felt when you first started. And you will get a taste of the real goal of yoga, which is to quiet the distractions of your mind. So that's my little tip for everyone. And Carl, it has been such a pleasure to work with you. You are such a bright light, And I hope that everybody out there continues to listen to your program. And I'm a new fan of yours, so I'd like to stay in touch with you.
Great. I'd appreciate that. Can you give us your website again?
Yes, thank you. It's Samata. It's www.samata.com. Also, if you just put in Larry Payne, Ph.D., I'm not hard to find on the Internet. And I have lots of DVDs and lots of programs, and we have annual retreats on the island of Kauai, annual weekends, a place called Esalen in California, and several trainings across the country, and we list these on our calendar. And it's a great joy to be a yoga teacher, and it's an honor. And I just hope that I can pass along the teachings that were so generously given to me while I made many trips to India and all over the world with my teachers.
Thank you very much. I appreciate this.
Thank you,
this.
Carl. Mm-hmm. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Me too. My second guest is Dr. Anu Abraham, who is a physical therapist with a doctorate of physical therapy, who specializes in mind-body work and is an empath. Anu incorporates her experience from traditional physical therapy and her passion understanding of the mind-body connection to foster truly integrative therapy. The relationship between the subconscious mind and its direct influence on the health of the body are connected and therefore addressed in all conditions. The body and mind are not separate. Anu, an empath, can facilitate a release in the body while shifting perspectives in the mind to relieve stress, which will help to relax and give space for the body to heal, as long as the body-mind allow the release. The sessions with her are both powerful and empowering as information and awareness of what the body is holding is provided. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Abraham, and I look forward to hearing about a holistic approach to overcoming health problems and worries. Now first, what is an empath mind-body therapist?
That's a great question. An empath is someone that senses things, that feels things, that has that deeper connection. For me personally, the way it works with me is I sense people's energy. I can sense their emotions prior to them even arriving to their appointment.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll usually take that information and just observe, okay, all of a sudden I'm rushing around and I wasn't feeling this before. So as soon as someone comes in, it's, was your day hectic? Were you rushing around? Oh my gosh, yes, that's exactly what I was feeling. So I kind of take the information that I receive mm-hmm. and ask them questions about it.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, the way that I use it is more of sensing, feeling connected and sensing what I feel that's separate from my own feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And I use that to apply it to the body.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it kind of difficult to separate your own feelings from someone else's, or not?
It was before I started doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
I myself had to do this work in order to be clear
mm-hmm.
on what I'm feeling, who I am, and to create that boundary, that separation. I feel like if anyone out there is an empath and they're sensitive and they feel a lot of stuff and
mm-hmm.
they can walk into the room and sense the emotions, I would say the most valuable thing they could do is work on themselves
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
so that you could be clear. You're not pushing your emotions on someone else. You're not pushing your thoughts on someone else. You're just clear and receiving information from them
mm-hmm.
and then sharing it.
It's difficult sometimes to not push your thoughts on someone else, especially, you know, when you're close with someone and they pick a certain type of health treatment that you don't think is going to be the best for them. And I have to keep
Absolutely.
Reminding myself that, you know, they have their lessons to learn. And
yes.
it's empowering for them to make their own decision.
I'm so glad you used that word. I feel like my responsibility is just to share what I observe, mm-hmm. or share what mm-hmm. I hear, or share what I feel. Their responsibility is take that information and see what feels right to them, mm-hmm. and execute from that place.
Mm-hmm.
I often say, we can agree to disagree. This is not, right. It doesn't have to be, you're right, I'm wrong, you're right. It's not about that. Mm-hmm. It's just taking the information and seeing what makes the most sense to me, what resonates with me, whatever that option looks like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then what are some common worries or problems that your patients bring to you?
It can range from literally anything. I would say, being in New York, money tends mm-hmm. to be one of the biggest financial mm-hmm. constraints, mm-hmm. therefore mental stress, running out of time, hustling and bustling about. So a lot of times people will bring in, like, how do I just be in the moment and use the time wisely instead of half being there and half worrying about it running out?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I would say is a lot of times people bring in any kind of miscommunications or discords they're experiencing with family members, relationships, coworkers, anything that's affecting the mind, people are learning it's affecting the body,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
whether it's a thought or an emotion. So it really can vary. It can range from trauma to like a simple argument.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then what is self-care and why is it important for our health?
Self-care is the most integral step in being in this world today, especially when you're a caretaker, any form of caretaking. It can vary on whatever the person needs, and that's where that listening step comes into play. If you just stop for a moment and just connect with your breath, it's, what do I need right now in this moment? It might be a glass of water.
Mm-hmm.
It might be to take a nap. It might be to go to bed early. It's listening to what your body needs in that moment. That's what self-care is, and making that a routine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Starting the day that way, nurturing yourself, or, you know, ending the day that way, plugging it into multiple parts of the day. It's making sure that your needs are met so that you don't become needy or depleted or start, you know, wearing down the body or the immune system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how do toxic relationships wreak havoc on our physical, mental health?
That's such a great question. A lot of people like to say, I have this really toxic person in my life. And the one unique thing that we have to look at is relationships mean you're relating to someone else. It's between two people. There's an energy shared between two people. So it's not necessarily fair to blame a toxic person and put it on them. It's, what am I inviting into my life? Why is this familiar? Why am I allowing someone to drain me? So how that ends up turning out is when you participate in a toxic relationship, it keeps the mind at unrest or dis-ease, and that just goes down like gravity into the body. You can feel your body tensing. You can feel your breath holding when you're around someone who's not desirable or not healthy or not mutual. My best suggestion with that is always understand your part in it. Why are you participating? Why is it familiar? And to connect with your boundaries and create some kind of healthy distance.
Mm-hmm. I've noticed that some people thrive in a toxic relationship. Or at least they seem
yes.
to stay in it. I don't know why. I had a cousin, and she was married to someone, and they always argued. They each had their own garden. They were very competitive with each other, and it was never very enjoyable being around them. But they seemed to stay together for many, many, many years. And then I had moved away when he died, but my brother told me that once he died, his wife treated him like he had been a saint. So it was almost like they had enjoyed that relationship, even though those around them didn't enjoy it.
Well, they were the ones who were participating in it. So if they chose that, it might have just been what they knew. Maybe that was familiar to them. And sometimes people, whether they like what's familiar to them or not, that's what they end up trusting and gravitating towards, and that brings in some subconscious comfort.
Then, Dr. Abraham, could you give us a few meditation tips?
Absolutely. I would say just first, make your body comfortable. Whether you're sitting, whether you're laying down, let your body first be at ease. So it's not like, oh, this is so uncomfortable, and you start hearing all these conversations distracting the mind. So I always say just get comfortable, close your eyes, take a few deep breaths into your body, and actually feel the breath going in. As you're breathing in, notice where you're holding in your body. Is there tension in your toes? Are you holding up your hip or your shoulders? Are you tensing your neck? Try to breathe into that. Try to notice where you're tightening. Keep breathing through that and just let that be your start. That's your first way of disconnecting from all the noise, disconnecting from all the distractions, and tuning in with yourself. Just breathing in that way, you, like I said, you hear things differently. You hear what your body needs. You're able to kind of let go of the day, let go of the stresses, the, you know, the daily nonsense that all can accumulate. And I would say that that's one of the easiest ways to start. It gives your mind a focus, which is your breath and your body. And it also slows the brain down.
Good. Can you give us some de-stressing tips and stresses to do after a long day?
Absolutely. I love a few that tend to hit the common places. I would say the neck and the back are the biggest common places. So for the neck, I always have people circle their shoulders while they're breathing in and while they're exhaling. Then having the shoulders rise up towards the ears as they breathe in, and on the exhale, just let it go. Let the shoulders drop with no care, no caution, just letting it go. And it helps to let the breath go. It helps to let the rest of the spine go. So having them do that repeatedly a few times over and over until their body starts responding. Circling the neck, tilting the head from one side to the other, breathing into the muscles that you're stretching. With the back, I like a portion from yoga, cat-cow, where you're on all fours, and you're stretching into the back, breathing into the back, and then letting go and stretching the opposite way, arching the back and arching the head up. So if you do that for a few rounds, it helps to loosen the entire spine, not just neck, but also mid-back and low-back. Child's pose is a wonderful one. It's one that teaches you a deep surrender, where you're just resting on the floor, your body is resting, it's supported, and you're breathing into the back, just letting go. You can stretch the arms from side to side to get the different sides of the back, not just the center, while you're doing child's pose, which also tends to help. So I would say that those are very simple, very easy ways to start.
Great. Then, Dr. Abraham, is there anything else you would like to say about how we can de-stress or how we can overcome our worries before we look at your book services and how the listeners can reach you?
Sure. I would say the biggest thing is just the awareness. Once you're aware of what you're worried about, let's take worry specifically, understand what's in your hands and what's not. So there is a part that you may or may not have to do. Choose to participate in that and let go of the rest, knowing the universe will take care of the rest. There is a supportive energy in the universe that is on your side, where there's an organic nature at play, and there needs to be some kind of trust that it will take care of itself if you don't wrangle your hand in it. So I would say that is definitely helpful with worry and anxiety. And again, with habits, I feel like just the awareness of habits that tend to either run you to the ground or destabilize your peace, just becoming aware of that, such as waking up in the morning and reaching for the phone first thing and mm-hmm. doing your work emails, that's going to set your day up. That's going to set your body up to be in go, go, go mode, and it might not even be ready.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
just becoming aware of what would help your body become more at peace and your mind become at peace, that's very helpful.
Because mm-hmm.
then you'll catch yourself when you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you brought in the universe, because I think sometimes when people worry, they get so self-centered that they
yes.
don't look beyond
yes.
themselves. And
yes.
there are yep. resources out there
100%.
If we look for them. It's interesting because I had a hurricane coming, Hurricane Irene, and I had experienced Hurricane Isabel, where I had 3 feet of water through my house. And things got moldy, and I didn't want to go through that experience again. And I had just read a book or an article that said we all have angels. And
yes.
so
I certainly live that way. I'm so glad you said that.
And so
yes.
I thought, well, I'm going to test this out. And so I opened the door. The water was 2 bricks up my house and 1 more brick, and it would have been in. And so I thought, well, I'm going to talk with my angels. And so I said, come on, my angels. I know you can keep the water out. I've gone through mm-hmm. this before. I don't want to go through it again. I've had this experience. I don't need this experience again. I know you can keep the water out. And I just kept talking and motioning, and the water never came any further. So the next day, the water was 3 feet from my house. And so I opened the door, and I went through the same, and the water didn't come any closer. But my neighbors, whose houses were further back from the water, they both flooded. So about a month later, I'm out walking, and usually I use a eucalyptus lime preparation to keep the mosquitoes off, but I had forgotten to put it on. And so I thought, well, my angels kept the water out of my house, so they certainly can keep these little mosquitoes off me. And so I called on my angels, and guess what? The mosquitoes left, and I had no problem. So
fantastic.
Every day now, I give my permission to the angels and to the guides and to the light beings to protect me and guide me through the day, because I also had read that they need permission to do these things. And so
yes.
that was an experience, learning that there are things that we aren't aware of sometimes beyond us that we can call on that will help us through these situations.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I feel like that is one of the number one things to heal anxiety and worry
mm-hmm.
is asking,
mm-hmm.
asking
mm-hmm.
for that support. Mm-hmm. That creates that opening. It creates that space for all of that to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And we have plenty of examples when it's come in before, and sometimes we forget.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we think we're in it all alone, and we have to do all by ourselves, and this is all our responsibility, and we're separate.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not separate. We're connected.
Right.
It's just remembering that and asking.
Mm-hmm.
Please show up. That was a really healthy conversation. I appreciate you sharing that, because that's a very powerful thing that you did,
mm-hmm.
and it worked.
And isn't it wonderful that we can talk about these things now, whereas 20 years ago, people didn't talk about angels and didn't talk about the things that people feel free to talk about now?
It's true. There is more of an opening where you can bring this into daily conversations and mainstream, and there's just a massive rise in consciousness. People
mm-hmm.
are waking up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's giving permission for others to talk about it. And as it shares and as it grows, it's lifting
mm-hmm.
the vibration all around.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
Then, Dr. Abraham, would you tell us about books, services, or things that you have that you offer the public and how they can reach you?
Absolutely. No book as of yet who knows, that might be on the way.
Right.
At this time, I do have a couple of articles written about love versus worry and healthy boundaries. So that can be accessed on our website, www.shift-pt.com. And a helpful piece is when I was going over the stretches, there is a video available on there that shows that with one of the local news stations. So people can reference that to have that visual feedback to show them about the different stretches.
Now, do you offer services over the telephone or Skype? Or do
Skype,
people come
I do.
You do?
Yes.
And can you tell us
Skype
about
I
this?
Do with breathwork sessions. They're very powerful in just getting the energy moving in your body and helping you release. So it's such an empowering modality that's become one of my favorites. So yes, that's absolutely available.
And would people then arrange this through your website?
Yes, they can contact me directly. I have all my information, and I believe my email should be on there. If it's not, just in case, it is anu@shift-pt.com.
Great. Good. Well, this has been very interesting. I appreciate it.
Likewise.
And
yeah.
As I said, I always love it when people use a holistic approach to help others. And I think that there's nothing like the holistic approach.
I agree, because it seems we've had our experiences that have been powerful in healing with it. And it's just waiting and available for anyone who's interested.
Well,
thank you for being a pioneer in your time and using it and implementing it into your life. It gives others inspiration to do the same.
Thank you, Dr. Abraham. And
sure.
I will be talking with you again.
That sounds great. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. I invite you to my websites, www.holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all of the past shows from the last 5.5 years under the blog with a search engine so you can look for a specific topic. You will also find a place to sign up for a free monthly newsletter on holistic health and the latest information on research on cancer, also under the blog. I also invite you to my website, beatlungcancer.net, where you will find information on my latest book, You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions. You will also find endorsements. You'll find additional information about the book, and you will also find a site where you can purchase the book from me, or you can also purchase it at Amazon.com. I also invite you to join me on Facebook under Carl Helvey, or under Holistic Health Show, or under Beat Lung Cancer. I also invite you to join me on LinkedIn under Carl Helvey, or on Twitter under Holist Health Show. I hope you've enjoyed the show today, and I look forward to seeing you again in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a great week.